Our next speaker is a postdoc at Iowa State University, Renee Dietzel.
Hello. Today I'll be talking about how efficiently corn and soybean-based cropping systems use water. And this work is actually being published today in Global Change Biology, so if you want more information, you can go check it out there. So to start, we need to define what is efficiency. And traditionally, the FAO definition of water use efficiency is how much grain is produced for how much water is used. So it's basically grain mass over evapotranspiration. This is a very yield-driven physiological definition. If you sort of back up and look at it from a field scale, you might ask, how efficient is it for a system to receive a lot of water but not use any of it? In this context, this loss of water is just as inefficient because when we lose water, we lose soil, we lose nutrients, and pesticide, and this is very bad for the water that gains this, as well as the field that's losing all of these things. So today I'm going to talk about a systems definition of water use efficiency, where grain mass is divided by all the major losses of water, evapotranspiration, plus runoff and drainage. So in this way, there's inefficiency if you have low grain biomass, low grain mass, but there's also inefficiency if you have a lot of water loss. The only problem with this definition is that everything in the denominator is really difficult to measure, and that's why the subtitle of the talk is a systems modeling analysis. So the model that we used was Agriculture Production System Simulator, or APSIM. This is a large platform which actually has about 60 different models in it. It's a very user-friendly interface, point and click, but you can still look at the source code. You can modify the source code if you want. So it's very transparent. It's updated several times during the year, and it's been developed by scientists all over the world. So it's free to everyone, and then once you start using it, you can also start suggesting changes and looking at things within the model that you'd like to change. The models I'm talking about today run on a daily time step at a field scale. The models that we used were the maize, soybean, and winter wheat model for our crops, soil N model for organic carbon and nitrogen, the surface organic matter model for residue decomposition, SWIM for soil water, soil temperature 2 for soil temperature, and the way it works within the platform is that these different crop and soil models work together to give us our outputs. So this is the model. We also need empirical data to calibrate and test the model. And for that, we use an experiment near Ames, Iowa, called the Comparison of Biofuel Systems, or COBS, which was established in 2008. COBS is a large plot study. These plots are about 30 by 60 meters. We have continuous corn with and without a cover crop, the corn-soybean rotation, soybean-corn rotation, fertilized prairie and unfertilized prairie, but today I'm only going to be talking about the row crops. And over the years, we've taken just a ton of measurements here, all the soil properties you could think of. There are also soil sensors to measure moisture and temperature every 30 minutes at 5 different depths down to 50 centimeters. Each plot is tiled individually, so we can measure the tile flow for each plot and also collect a leachate from each plot. A whole suite of plants measurements have been taken over the years, greenhouse gases, and there's also a weather station on site so we can get temperature and precipitation and radiation, which is really important because these are the drivers of the model. So I'm just going to show you a few of the calibration results that are relevant to the water balance. The first here is just the biomass. On the top, the continuous corn, the lines are what simulated, the points are what we measured. So the next one, you can see there's some little dots for winter rye in there, then the corn-soybean, and the soybean-corn. And overall, we were really satisfied with how well APSIM did with this biomass, and this is important because it's an important part of the water balance that you're getting your biomass right and you can be confident in your transpiration. So to go on and sort of gain more confidence in our calibration, we looked at the soil water, so this is at 5 centimeters. Each dot is a measured day. The lines are what's simulated. And Epsom did very well across all these depths, 5, 10, 15, 35, and 50 centimeters. So this is another indication that the water balance did really well. So in addition to these, we also had tile drainage, the black being observed and the gray simulated. And across the 3 years, the seasonal amount of tile drainage was very similar with what was observed and simulated. The only year that wasn't great was 2010 for the soybeans. So you can also see that there's some variability in how much rain was received that year, this year, and this is also a really interesting part of the story. So across 6 years, we had flood, we had drought, and we had historically average precipitation. In 2008 and 2010, we had flood years. In 2012, it was very dry. We had a drought that year. In 2013, it was actually just really wet in the spring, but then the summer was very dry. So 2009 and 2011 were more of our historically average years. So if we look at the efficiency across these different climate or different precipitation regimes, you can see on the left the traditional definition of water use efficiency. And in 2012 and 2013, these were the most inefficient years with the physiological definition because basically, you know, we had not as much water, yields didn't do as well, and this brought the whole efficiency down. Soybean, less biomass, and less sensitive to drought, you see not as much of a difference. On the right, we have the systems definition of water use efficiency, and these two flood years that I mentioned, 2008 and 2010, you can see that they really took a penalty for all the water they lost that year, and also looked very inefficient. And when you look at this, you can sort of start to see that there's a response to year and response to precipitation regime. So we went on to ask, what would be the optimum amount of rain to get the best system water use efficiency? So we took the years of the study, which are in blue there. This is just all the corn together. We took the past 30 years of historical weather data. Then we modified that data to increase rainfall events by 15% and to decrease rainfall events by 15% to produce more wet and dry years. And then we fit a curve to this data, and at the peak of the curve is 430 millimeters. So this would be the optimum rainfall for a growing season to avoid drought, which you see left of the line. We have inefficiencies due to low grain yield, or to avoid a lot of water loss and a lot of nutrient and soil loss, which is to the right of the line. And here it is for soybeans. So a little bit lower, 317 millimeters would be optimum. And we have just basically overall a lot more water loss in soybeans than we do in corn. So for the Midwestern United States, we have predictions of higher frequency of flood and higher frequency of drought. And our simulations, you know, reflect these changes with the rainfall manipulation we did. So in the future, we can expect more years with low systems water use efficiency. In the dry years, yield will be inhibited, and in the wet years, we'll lose a lot of water from the system. So if we go on to just throw out some solutions to these problems, if we think of what plants we have in the landscape right now, we probably aren't going to produce a plant that does really well in drought and does really well in flooding. So we, again, have to step back and look at more of a systems perspective and try and design systems that have both drought-tolerant and flood-tolerant plants. Some examples could be diversified pasture, hay fields. If you're looking at biofuel crops, as this experiment did, diversified prairie systems for biofuels. There's also some really good experiments in Iowa looking at incorporating a small amount of diversified prairies within cornfields. Then an engineer solution would be sort of a capture of water and then reuse. So capture it during the wet years and reuse it again during dry years. So I'll leave this funding slide up here and I can take questions.
Questions for Renee.
Go ahead.
So all your plots have a tile on them, correct?
Right.
So the slope of that curve where it falls off of excess rain probably is not nearly as severe as it would be had those plots all not been essentially well drained by tile anyway.
Right. I think the plots would look really different if we didn't have well-drained soils. Basically, when we have flooding events in these plots, we almost never have a yield penalty because they drain very quickly. So there would also be more in the story of having more rain and having yield penalties. So it would look very different if we didn't have tile drainage.
Yields are not nearly that perfectly drained, would they?
Not many of them. Yeah. Right.
I didn't quite catch how you had estimated the effect.
Basically, through a water balance, we looked at all of the other components of the water balance, and the only one left was ET. And so the model also outputs ET, so it will tell us what it is. We check that against the balance that we got from the measurements.
Good. Any other questions? Just interesting idea. Systems approach.
Did you guys look at phosphorus?
We did not look at phosphorus.
Yeah. You use a lot of bonds, your major parameters, the ET, and also the drainage, what happened to the soil storage and also the surface runoff. So you do not have the most important. Is that correct? If you got all the water balance, you would have evaporation, surface runoff. Water storage, right?
Right.
The soil has to store the water. The presumably water storage is very small. If you have a major of detail, you need to get the soil moisture measurement. You do have soil moisture measurement.
We do have soil moisture measurement, and we did look at changes in storage when we were.
What is the storage component?
We included it in the balance.
Oh, and just 5%, 10%, or?
Ooh, I don't remember. Yeah, sorry.
Probably very small.
Yeah, I think so.
Question.
Yeah, you predicted optimum amounts of rainfall for corn and soy. How do those compare to irrigated lands where we kind of know or have an idea of what those optimum levels are to verify your predicted levels if you looked at that?
We haven't looked at that. Yeah, the systems I expect would be pretty different if you had irrigation. But a measure like this would be helpful in those systems to know, you know, sort of what your limits might be for irrigation and when you start seeing damage opposed to yield gain.
Anyone from Nebraska in the room? Working with your neighbors to the west, Renee.
Also, if you use irrigation, then you evaporate. The thermal transpiration temperature would be very high. And you get it right place. You've got higher moisture, longer evaporation. Thermal transpiration would be high, right?
Right.
So your probably efficiency would be high, too, because you're growing yield.
It would, but relative to a lot of the other components of the water balance, the changes in evapotranspiration were not real great.
Does that mean you do not need irrigation? So if you have the deficit during the cropping major growing season with corn, you must have some deficit. No deficit yet.
Right.
Okay, we're going to move to the next speaker. Thank you, Renee.